Here's a quote for you. The radio play is an unfairly neglected and underappreciated art form. Now is the time for its revival. That's from Nathan Joe, who's a playwright and performance poet, and he joins me now. Kia ora, Nathan.
Kia ora, Karen.
You've written a piece for the Pantograph Punch, Oral Fixation and Praise of Radio Plays. Well, you won't get an argument from me.
Yeah, it's such a lovely medium, but it's, as you've quoted me, a very unfairly neglected art form. I've always loved them. It's the old man in me, perhaps, but luckily there's a rich archive of them online if you know where to look. But within the New Zealand context, it's not necessarily within our public pop culture consciousness. You know, it's not water cooler conversation over work.
Definitely not. The radio play, of course, has a great history, as you say, and predates television as an art form, and that's possibly why it was so huge. And let's go back to 1938 and Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, which it is said created panic after it was broadcast, but that was a myth?
Yeah, well, it's a common misconception because it's such a, I guess, tantalising idea, isn't it, that a radio play broadcast nationwide would cause genuine panic and fear. People, you know, the myth is that people thought it was a true broadcast of actual news, that aliens were taking over the country. That is a myth. If you look into it, there's no actual confirmation that this is something that happened. It's just something through the gossip mill that I think broadcasters themselves enjoyed. It was, you know, the notion of, I wouldn't even say bad publicity, but like exciting publicity that gave the medium more verve and heft and power than it probably has, unfortunately.
I don't know about that. 1938, aliens invading. I'd like to have been there and heard it.
Yeah, same.
And just responded to what was being broadcast out of the radio speaker, because that's really what it's all about, isn't it? It's theatre of the mind. And because it came before television and because it is theatre transposed to the radio, it's all about what's going on in your head.
Well, and that's the thing. It demands so much more of the viewer and listener, than a stage play or cinema, because you are there creating the play. You're the co-author, which is not something that can be said for many other mediums except the novel. But the radio play is a strange sort of hybrid of all these things. It's filmic with the mind's eye. It's more visual, ironically, than a theatre piece can be. It has the potential to be, because the imagination has no budget. It has no bounds.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think also it has a lot to do with sound effects, doors opening and closing, horses' hooves perhaps, cars leaving and arriving.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't get a sense of, unless it's a very intimate theatre, an exhalation. You know, an actor's breathing isn't as palpable in the ASB waterfront, whereas you can really hear someone panting and gasping on a radio play.
You can hear that with presenters as
well.
So what attracted you to the form, Nathan?
Well, when I was first starting out as a playwright, actually, one of the best ways, I never had a formal education in it, one of the best ways to become a writer is to read more and watch more. But with theatre, it's not well archived. Radio plays are a bit more accessible than trying to, you know, watching a filmed play is really just not the same experience as watching one live. But a radio play is a medium into itself.
It absolutely is. I don't think a lot of people realise that. I'm glad that you do, because this is its own discipline.
Yeah, absolutely.
A radio studio.
So I had the opportunity, I suppose, to delve into the limited, well, not unlimited, but like complicated archive of radio plays online, because you kind of have to find them illegally or through third parties like YouTube. You know, a lot of the radio plays on YouTube aren't necessarily officially placed there. They're from, you know, users who love them and have uploaded them for the sake of an audience.
Where have they got them from? Have they broadcast them?
Other people have recorded them. Yeah, it's quite interesting that there are these, I guess, deep cuts, essentially, and hardcore fans that have just gone out of their way to record these things. When you're not supposed to, technically.
Have you looked at them right around the world and in, you know, different countries, and what the most popular ones have been? In New Zealand, I think many listeners would remember The Archers, and of course in Britain, because it was such a long-running radio play. But what about plays here in New Zealand?
Plays here in New Zealand aren't typically put online by third parties. Like here in New Zealand, you really have to get them officially. So RNZ has them in what is called the Major Plays collection. It's still a very limited collection, but it's a great one. You know, what you do have is spectacular. I just wish you had more. That's really the issue here, is that it's such a limited library.
How far back do they go?
It's a pretty contemporary collection, to be honest. I think all the plays are from the last 10 to 20 years, predominantly. And I think the latest ones are within the last 3 years, even 3 to 4.
When I think about what's required in a drama department to make a play, a radio play, there are many aspects to it because, you know, there are the actors, the studio time, the director, the editing, getting all of that, you know, onto the radio. So it is actually quite perhaps financially limiting to be able to make a radio play, even though for a publicly funded radio station, you would think that that would be a priority.
Well, I think a lot of these independent makers that I talk about within the article, they're doing it in a much more low-budget fashion, independent fashion, which is in isolation. What I mean by that is they're getting the performers to read the lines out in isolation rather than in a studio context.
Oh, I see, and then sharing them.
Yeah, and then editing them together.
Right.
Rather than using one studio where it's done live. So in a way, the classic form of the radio play recording or production has sort of lost on my generation because it's too expensive, because it's not practical. So a lot of them are doing them, you know, recording them by themselves and then sending it to an audio engineer who stitches them up later, which is, the process itself isn't as organic either, I would say. You know, you're not responding to another actor live. What you're doing is sort of doing voice recording and voice artistry like an animated film would be doing it, I think.
Yes, I can see that would be a great possibility now that we've gone through COVID-19 and lockdown and so many people have learnt to use their little home recording. You know, they've got got a mic and whatever, and so they can then share that audio and then piece it together. It's a good idea. It's a great idea when you've not been able to get out to the theatre to then be able to produce something that you can not have to go into a studio to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Like the idea that we go through phases in like history with something like COVID that can spur on, I guess, a paradigm shift in both technology and innovation and the way an art form responds to life itself. And I mean, proudly Asian Theatre, who are one of the subjects that I discuss in the article, their radio play was originally intended to be a play reading, which was cancelled due to lockdown or COVID-19 and then lockdown. And then they were like, how do we share this play in a practical way and actually in a way that would have a bigger audience than had we just done the play reading in a small 65-seat studio? Whereas radio's reach is, I mean, in theory, unlimited.
Yes, it is. And what a great idea to then go. And actually, I think it's may work better.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, as much as I love live theatre, and it's not to say that live theatre is worse than radio or one is better than the other, there are aspects of the imagination that can only be filled with an enormous budget. And actually, no matter your budget, some imaginative aspects can never really be fully realised. You know, the notion of a set with a giant hill, you know, that's unheard of within an independent theatre context, or, you know, building a castle. You can play with genre, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, horror, in a much more physical way, ironically, than if you had to stage it.
I'm talking to Nathan Joe about the lost art of the radio play. He's a playwright. Are you going to write one yourself?
Well, that's funny. After the article appeared online, people were like, oh, you should write your own. Why aren't you writing your own? Because it's a funny thing being a critic, writer of the form you criticise, and a performance poet, because there's always the expectation that, you know, you put your money where your mouth is, in a sense. I think definitely the incentive, because...
Maybe definitely.
Maybe definitely. The pressure is on, that's the thing, isn't it? Now that I've talked about radio plays in such passionate detail, I want to be able to live up to my own expectation of what I think a radio play is, which is something that really captures the richness of dialogue, which is fast, which is detailed in texture with sound, and, you know, things that you wouldn't notice on stage become so important in a radio play.
Of course. And tell us about some contemporary New Zealand playwrights and the work that they're doing.
In radio or just in general?
Oh, no, in radio. Yeah, radio plays.
Well, you've got...
You mentioned one.
Yeah, so you've got Proudly Asian Theatre who did
the... What was the plot of that?
Black Tree Bridge. So Black Tree Bridge is this kind of beautiful homecoming story of a woman who's come back from trying to find her roots in China. And she's come back to New Zealand realising she doesn't really have home anywhere. She feels completely displaced. And it's about that sense of that kind of quarter-life crisis of feeling that everyone you know is succeeding and darting ahead of you and you're inert completely.
Quarter-life crisis, I love it.
It's a deeply 25? Existential play.
20.
Yeah, mid-20s, late-20s character.
Right.
Named Chris. Yeah, and it's a Chinese Pākehā story. So it's this kind of rich reflection of kind of New Zealand now, I think, in that we're multicultural, that we're a country in transition, and there are these beautiful poetic passages that I think, when read on stage, aren't as... Or when read in radio, you really listen to them. Because there's something about prose that can get lost in stage imagery and swallowed up by the vastness of a stage, whereas the beauty of having headphones in the kind of contemporary radio format is you really listen to the words in ways that you just won't and actually can't on stage.
And that also applies to the listener who is receiving it because that's all they've got.
Absolutely. You're effectively blind in this context and that, you know, your senses are heightened, right?
And what about the apocalypse songs? Apocalypse songs. I listened to the first episode of that after reading your article.
Yes, so that's a serialized radio drama, which is quite unusual in that it's closer to the kind of podcast form of having multiple episodes. It's, you know, they're trying to hook you with a ongoing story of a journalist, and it's using. In a way, it's playing homage.
Music journalist.
Yeah, music journalist. Yes. So she's paying homage to the form of journalism in the form of radio in the content of the story, which is quite a beautiful thing. It has supernatural elements. It's about music that can predict the future, potentially. It's kind of a fascinating premise, you know. It's using, again, when I was
a
saying genre.
Long-lost artist.
Yeah, long-lost artist. It's using the sort of found doco format. So it's playing a lot with our expectations of the form in a way that maybe a lot of radio plays don't do, though I would say it's also a less overtly conventional play as well because of that. It's, you know, it's not situated within like a pure dialogue drama back and forth in a way that maybe, say, Harold Pinter was interested in.
Yes.
Or even Carol... I mean, that's the thing. The UK, a lot of the great British playwrights that we think of all had roots in radio drama. And I think that's something that contemporary young playwrights don't have an opportunity to do is experiment with that form and improve their dialogue writing through radio.
What about the translation from the theatre to radio? Because, as I said, it's a different discipline. So you can't necessarily just take a play that you've put on in the theatre and turn it into a radio play, can you?
I think it requires a level of skillful adaptation. I mean, some of the radio plays on the major plays collection are plays that were taken from the stage and
just
put into...
Just recorded.
And just recorded, actually.
Right.
But they were selected for the reason that they could translate quite well, which is quite lovely.
With maybe a bit of sound added.
Yes, exactly. But I would say that, you know, not all plays can be translated, because we're taught in many respects that plays are a visual medium. And they absolutely are, but there are also plays that are very dialogue-centric, rich in kind of verbal sparring. Like a play that was on...
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I mean, again, you probably miss out on the sort of sweltering passion of human bodies, but a play that Silo Theatre did a few years ago called I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say the C-O-C-K.
Yeah, you did. That's right. Can we spell?
was also recorded for the BBC at one point, and it's a very verbal play. You know, there's a lot of like nasty back and forth verbal sparring. It's, you know, named up, it's named Cock because it's after cockfighting. And it's not a play you immediately think of as a radio play, but actually it works brilliantly. So I just think if contemporary younger playwrights had the opportunity, it would be a rich medium for us to develop in very new ways.
Is there anywhere you can go to get a grant or some money from, say, Creative New Zealand to write a radio play? I note that I was having a look online about Radio New Zealand's history, and in 1989 there were, they said, only 11 people employed in the Radio New Zealand drama department, responsible for producing about 20 to 30 plays a year.
Like, that's incredible, because that really is a dead art form now in terms of it doesn't happen.
You know,
playwrights are not commissioned to do radio plays. It's unheard of within like a contemporary context. But you as an independent playwright can apply for funding. You know, it's just that people don't think to, because they think, why would I? Why should I? Cassandra, who wrote Apocalypse Songs, that's how she got the funding to do that, through applying through actually the recent CNZ.
COVID-19?
Yeah, the continuity funding.
Oh, good.
Whereas Chai Ling, who wrote Black Tree Bridge, she got funding from Play Market to help record that.
Oh, well, you may have inspired a whole new generation of playwrights for radio.
Well, I hope so. I think that's the most exciting thing about writing an article like this. It's both archival, but it's also advocacy and I guess just an ode to a dead art form that I hope is actually not dead, in fact.
We've got a text here for you, Nathan, about War of the Worlds. Evening, Karen and Nathan. The Great War of the Worlds broadcast did indeed open with a very ordinary-sounding radio play. Where it was effective was that it began interrupting the play to breaking news, purporting to be genuine. So that was how it
may have had that
had its reputation.
Impact.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that you say it's a myth, because I've always heard that it isn't, so I'm really going to go and research
that. Yeah, I think it's worth researching. As far as actual news is concerned, there's nothing to say, no reports on it actually being the case. But I like the myth, and who's to say there aren't people who didn't believe it? I just don't think the whole country was in panic, which is generally the sort of overblown mythology of it.
Well, I'd love to hear from people whether they would like to hear more radio plays on Radio New Zealand, for example. So
yeah,
I'll send that call out there, 2101. You can text us if you'd like to hear more radio plays and pass that on to you, Nathan.
And I'd be absolutely curious if there are radio plays that were broadcast at the time that are in your deep archives that just aren't on the... because there clearly are only a select few on the major plays collection. And I assume they weren't deleted for good, but I don't know how things are sorted around here.
Nathan, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Really interesting, and a great article in the Pantograph Punch, if you'd like to read it.
Cool. Thank you, Karen.
Nice to talk to you.